Good morning. I'm Harley Schlanger from the LaRouche Organization with your daily video update for December 8th, 2022. Today I'm going to focus primarily on the danger implicit in the attacks on Russian airfields, that is, on strikes by Ukraine into Russian territory. Now, let's start by looking at the nature of these attacks. There were two air bases hit hundreds of miles inside Russia. These occurred on December 5th. One of them was less than 150 miles from Moscow. These were at the Diaghilevo base and the Engels base. The Russians determined that the attacks were carried out by Soviet-era unmanned aerial vehicles. And the question that's posed by this is, did Ukraine act on its own to hit these locations? Now, the importance of this is that the Engels base in particular is central to Russia's long-range aviation fleet, and it's also part of Russia's strategic nuclear forces. Bombers from this base have been deployed in operations inside Ukraine from Russia. There was another drone attack which hit an airfield in Russia's Kursk region that borders Ukraine. Now, the Russians have determined that these were carried out by unmanned drones of the Tupolev T-4 or Tu-141, which have a 1,000-kilometer range. So they've been modified so they can serve as unmanned drone attacks, but have a long range. Now, the question becomes then, what is behind this? Is it just Ukraine that's doing this? Now, Russia has accused Ukraine of the attacks, but the question is, what if they conclude that these attacks were designed and organized and carried out by the United States or with U.S. aid? This would be a significant escalation, as the Russians have said that they would consider any attacks on their sovereign territory as a potential existential threat. Now, so far we have from the United States several comments denying any culpability. Ned Price, the State Department spokesman, said, quote, "We have not provided weapons which can be used to strike inside Russia." And then Tony Blinken, who, by the way, is not very, very much trusted by anyone these days, but Blinken said, quote, "We have neither encouraged nor enabled the Ukrainians to strike inside of Russia," unquote. There are reports that contradict this, including reports from unnamed U.S. military sources who say that the modified Tu-141 drones used U.S. GPS satellites data to target and hit the bases. So if that's the case, that does represent a very significant U.S. involvement and a provocation against Russia. Now, the question, though, is, what's behind this? Does the U.S. really want to escalate at this point? And it appears as though there is a split developing within the United States, within the command structure. There are many people in the military who are openly, as in the case of General Milley, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, or through their sources, indicating that they now believe that military victory for Ukraine is impossible, and that it's time to step back and engage in a diplomatic solution. While there are others in the State Department, in the intelligence community, National Security Council, who are committed to pushing through to the end, and the end for them is a humiliating defeat for Putin and Russia. And one of the people advocating this is the crazed Victoria Nuland, the longtime neocon who's been involved in the Ukrainian operations for over a decade. Nuland was just in Kiev and was reporting to the Ukrainian government that the U.S. is committed to this fight to the end. Now, there's also a potential of a split within the so-called unified Western alliance. We have both President Macron of France and Chancellor Scholz of Germany issuing statements recently acknowledging that they do believe that Russia does have legitimate security concerns, and discussing moving back toward diplomatic resolution, although hedging in the way that they have in the past, which is completely useless. Why make the statement that you want to have diplomatic resolution if you then say, but it depends on a Russian surrender or humiliation? So the situation as a whole remains unresolved in terms of what the West intends. Is the West involved in these provocations? And what will the Russian response be? And I assume many people in U.S. military circles are holding their breath, a bit worried about how the Russians will respond to this. Now, in the meantime, the provocations continue. Time magazine just named Zelensky the man of the year. Now, before you get too upset about that, keep in mind that I think in 1937 or 38, Time magazine named Adolf Hitler its man of the year. But there was something a bit more strange from the Financial Times. It's not actually strange if you know what's going on with these things. But the Financial Times, which is the City of London publication, which has been for the war from the beginning, in naming Zelensky the man of the year, they described him as, quote, the standard bearer for liberal democracy in the contest with authoritarian states. This plays into this whole idea of democracy versus the autocratic countries. Of course, it's absurd. Zelensky has shut down the opposition in Ukraine, shut down opposition media. He's ruling as a dictator and has used organizations such as the Committee to Counter Disinformation and Mirotvorets to target for assassination opponents of the Ukrainian government. Hardly the nature of real democracy. But of course, in the newspeak of the war hawks, this is democratic. Suppressing and silencing opposition is necessary for, quote, democracy, unquote. So this kind of perversion is prevalent in all the discussion that goes on, including the call for a second summit for democracy to take place at the end of March. Now, in contrast to this Western media support for war, support for the hybrid warfare, the censorship, and so on, I'm stumbling a bit because it's still hard for me to imagine how people can talk in one moment about the wonders of democracy and the rules-based order, and then turn around and violate everything they just said they stand for. Well, in contrast to the Western media promoting the war against Russia and covering for real authoritarian policies, we saw two events yesterday which were in sharp contrast. The first was an interview on Russian television with Solovyov, one of the most popular Russian talk shows, an interview he did with Helga Zeplerush on Helga's 10 fundamental principles, which we've been talking about on these updates for the last couple of weeks. The Solovyov interview will be linked at the bottom of the description page, but I just will tell you that at the end of the interview, in which he discussed very thoroughly Helga's 10 fundamental principles, he ended by saying, "I hope you succeed." Very significant. Now, on the same day, Helga Zeplerush and the Schiller Institute were given an award by the Mexican Journalists Association. The honor was for the Freedom of Expression Award for the work that the Schiller Institute and specifically Helga Zeplerush have done to promote freedom of expression. And we'll have on our website a video of Helga's statement accepting the award. Again, this is in contrast to what we're seeing from the Western media, which is promoting war, neoliberal austerity policies, and censorship and suppression of discussion. Now, tomorrow's Friday, so I'll have my usual Friday questions segment, and you can send me your questions at harleysch@gmail.com, and I'll read them and I'll take as many of them as I can. But I'll also take a look at the ongoing implosion of the Ponzi schemes that are considered the Western financial system as a result of financialization. We'll take a look at these from the FTX to the BIS report on the coming collapse of the derivatives and the implications of that. So send me your questions, join me tomorrow, share this video, and also share the video interview of Soloviev with Helga Zeplerush that will be linked at the bottom of the page. Thanks for joining me. See you again tomorrow.